paid no attention to it. Zeb, Lane, Egon, all locked in their own private universes, all feeling, hearing, seeing, even tasting the sensations from the ship's sensors and systems. Grant had tasted raw primal power, and now he felt empty in its absence, deprived, sullenly angry, and afraid. "Approaching the bottom of the cloud deck," Krebs' voice sounded alien, distant, a disturbance in Grant's universe of power and strength, like an alarm clock's buzzing interference in a warm, exciting dream. The thrill of the thruster's surge was gone, but the fusion generator still sang its beguiling song of power, whispering to Grant the universes beyond the beyond, worlds to discover and conquer. "Look at that!" Grant could not tell who said it, but the words stirred him out of his nearly hypnotic trance. "Put it on the main screen," that was Krebs' voice, definitely. Even in the eerie distortions of this liquid gunk in which they lived, her thick, harsh tone was unmistakable. The wall screen above their consoles showed an endless cloudscape as far as the scanners could see, a vast panorama of billowing clouds scudding along on powerful streams of wind that tattered and shredded them even as the alien invaders from Earth watched wide-eyed. Clouds boiled up from far below, only to have their tops sheared off by the furious wind. High above it all, the sky was covered with its eternal cloak of multi-hued clouds stretched across the world like a blanket, the colors of its underside strangely muted, pastel. The hydrogen-helium atmosphere was as transparent as... Grant almost giggled as he realized it was as transparent as air. It was thickly dotted with those fat, billowing clouds scudding madly along, almost like fluffy cumulus of a tropical sky on Earth. Far below was nothing but haze. Grant remembered that Jupiter's atmosphere gradually thickened until it became liquid, with no clear demarcation between air and sea. Somewhere down there, the inexorable pressure thickened the atmosphere until it became liquid, a world-girdling ocean, its water corrosively acidic, heavily laced with ammonia and exotic compounds. "Not like Earth," Grant said to himself. "Not at all like Earth, where the oceans fill basins in the rocky crust and the gravity's too light to squeeze the air into liquid. Not like Mars or Venus, or even the Galilean moons. Not like any of those balls of rock or ice. This is an alien world, different, totally different from anything we've ever seen before." Shenghe was shuddering now, bucking in the jet stream winds. Grant pictured the ship as a tiny sliver of a discus being tossed and tumbled by the ferocious currents of wind streaking across the face of Jupiter's all-girdling ocean. "Long-range sensors," Krebs ordered. The wall screen view abruptly shifted. Far off on the distant horizon, Grant saw a dark, ominous tower of clouds flickering with lightning bolts, climbing like a wrathful giant out of the ocean and rising to the cloud deck high above. "That's the Great Red Spot," said Carlsted, his voice hollow with awe. Krebs ordered, "Thrusters on! Minimum cruise power!" The ship had been coasting since they had entered the clouds, using Jupiter's thick atmosphere to slow them from orbital speed, turning velocity into heat as they rode through the thick cloud deck and down into the clear hydrogen-helium atmosphere, gliding like a discus hurled across the skies of Jupiter. "Thrusters on, I said," Krebs growled. Grant blinked and activated the thrusters with a thought. For good measure, he pressed a fingertip against the touchpad of his console. This is dangerous, he realized. An awful lot of temptation to put into the hands of mortals. Feeling the surge of power building within his own senses, Grant told himself, "I can control the engines with a thought. I can destroy us all with a foolish impulse." Defiance. Deeper and deeper into the Jovian atmosphere they plunged, farther into the all-encompassing haze that gradually thickened into the global sea. Still feeling the thrumming power of the ship's generator, the muted thunder of the thrusters, Grant strained his eyes to pierce through the darkening haze that the wall screen showed. There was nothing to see. Not even the infrared sensors detected anything in the fog, yet still Grant stared hard at the screen. Partly he focused his attention there because it helped to keep him from falling completely under the hypnotic spell of the enhanced sensory systems in his implanted biochips. Like his father's advice about impure thoughts when he'd been a preteen first awakening to the seductions of the body, "Think about something else, son. Don't dwell on the temptation." Grant stared into the emptiness and tried to ignore the deep, unbidden, relentless urge to power up the thrusters and dive the ship straight down into the ocean that waited for them deep below. "Where are the Jovian life forms?" he asked himself. "Where are the Medusas and those shorebirds that the probes found? And the algal colonies that float in the clouds? The sky here looks empty, barren." He realized that none of the others had spoken more than a few words since they'd linked with the ship's systems. "It's working on them, too," Grant told himself. "They're just as absorbed by this electronic seduction as I am. Just because they've had more experience with it doesn't mean it's any easier for them to handle it." "I thought we'd see airborne organisms," he said aloud. Karlstad seemed to twitch, as if suddenly awakened from a trance. "They're out there," he said. Mizurawa countered. "The sensors haven't detected any. Not even on a microscopic scale?" Well, microorganisms are present everywhere," Mizurawa agreed. "But what about the big life forms?" Grant asked. "They're pretty thinly scattered," Karlstad replied. "They need a lot of territory to support themselves."
"Maybe they're afraid of us," O'Hara suggested in a subdued voice.
"Afraid?
After all, we did come crashing down here like a great blazing meteor, didn't we?"
Karlstad hesitated a moment, then conceded, "Yes, there is that." O'Hara started to add something, but bit the thought off and said instead,
"Message from the director coming in, Captain."
The wall screen view of the unbroken haze was instantly replaced by a grainy, static-streaked image of Dr. Wo. He looked grimly angry.
"The IAA inspection team is making their final burn to rendezvous with the station," he said, without preamble. "I have been ordered to recall your mission. You are supposed to return to Station Gold immediately."
Everyone on the bridge froze. Grant turned slightly and saw Krebs floating up near the overhead, one thick-fingered hand pressed against the metal paneling to hold her in place. She was staring at the screen, the stony expression on her face unreadable.
"You are to acknowledge receipt of this message," Wo said, drawing out each word as if to emphasize them.
The silence on the bridge was palpable. Grant felt shocked, bitter disappointment that the mission was being aborted, anger at the IAA for cutting it short. He wanted to go on, to stay linked with the ship, to probe deeper into that alien sea. O'Hara reached for the keyboard of her console.
"What are you doing?" Krebs snapped.
"The director said we should acknowledge receiving his message."
"I will decide when to acknowledge it," said Krebs.
"But..."
Krebs hovered up by the overhead for several more silent moments. Then she pointed toward Grant and commanded,
"Increase thrust 20%.
Grant reacted automatically and instantly felt the surge in power, like flexing a well-lubricated muscle. It felt good, strong, right. From beyond where O'Hara stood with a frown of uncertainty on her face, Karlstad glanced toward Grant with a puzzled, troubled look. The bridge seemed to tilt noticeably. Mizurawa called out,
"Flight angle steepening past 20 degrees. 25. "No need to call out the flight angle," Krebs snapped. We are going into the ocean at maximum rate of descent.
Mizurawa hesitated a heartbeat